Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. Hope you guys are all doing well this week. Unlike my guest who used to be from this neck of the woods, we spent all of January. It was so cold that the 14 inches of snow stayed until last week. And little by little, all of the snow is melted, but I'm sure she remembers a time where you just weren't going to have a clean car for about a month. But got a rainstorm going on tonight, but thankfully we're getting a reprieve on the temperature, and for that I am grateful. Hope for spring, right? For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your every Wednesday night host, Kim Justice. Tonight, got our old friend, for those of you who have been around for a while, for those of you who haven't, it'll be a great new experience. But Dr. Maria Romanis will be joining us to discuss protecting others from ourselves and building trust in relationships. True belonging is about being present without sacrificing our sense of self. With Valentine's Day next week, some food for thought. We tend to gauge that day in terms of whether or not we have a love interest and how that's going for us. We're happy if we have that special someone and depressed if we don't, feeling lonely and left out. Now, think back to your childhood. Do you remember if your mom got you one of those boxes with the 25 little Valentines in it? And we passed them out to our friends at school. That wasn't about a love interest. That was about spreading the love through our friends and our family. These days, that gesture, if any is made, is an emoji or a text. In any case, as a child, those cards we handed out went to friends, both boys and girls. We spread the love and happiness to all. We may have shared sweet treats or those little candy hearts with cute words on them. Either way, we spread happiness, joy, and love. It was a fun day, no one felt lonely or left out. How do we generate those feelings in all our relationships every day? Not the cards and sweets, but the being present, projecting love and trust. Well, we're going to talk about that and see. But before Maria and I go on with our topic tonight, which is building trust in relationships, I have another old friend who swung by, who actually got the opportunity. I've known both of these people. I've been doing this for over 13 years on Wednesday nights, and I've known both of these people for the better part of that time and have not had the opportunity to meet either of them in person. But these two did meet each other in person after meeting here on the show, and I think it's been a while because both Maria and I were trying to get a hold of him and were not able. So I'm going to bring on first, I'm going to welcome Dr. Maria. So glad to have you back here tonight. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm going to bring on our friend, because I don't know when he's got to get to bed, but I know that he was anxious to say hello to you.
Oh, good.
Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Michael.
Hello, Dr. Maria. It's Michael.
Right around the corner from you. Yeah.
The funny thing is, Dr. Maria, I finished up laying my ramps. I've laid 25 ramps in Pinellas County, Florida, and I've laid 5 ramps in Pasco County, Florida, for people with disabilities to get out to the waterways. And I finished that up, and now my mother's going in for surgery.
Oh.
And so I've been a little busy, yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
and she's 85. So I'm deeply sorry. But if you call me and leave a message, I would have got back to you.
I do better with text. But you've left me a couple messages, and then I tried to like arrange a time with you, but I do, first of all, you can't call me during a work day. Okay. Because
right,
if I'm at work, my phone, I have it on focus, and I don't get phone calls at work unless it's like my husband. I have
right,
emergency.
Right, right, okay.
So, you know, the best time to try
okay,
to call me
yeah,
would be in the evening or the weekend, okay? So that's, if you're
okay,
going to try to call
okay,
me, and it's,
I got,
best to
yeah,
arrange, it's best to arrange a time by texting first, okay? Because I have a
okay,
pretty busy. All right, so I want to make time for you, but we've got to like coordinate a time, and to do it by texting is easy. Let's arrange a time to talk by text, and then we can plan a time to talk. It's not that I don't want to talk. It's just we have to like, you know, get on this at the same time at the same place, you know?
Right,
so, okay,
right, yeah.
I was
yeah,
worried about you. I actually asked our mutual friend, the doctor.
Oh, well, no,
Ask
Kim. I go through brick walls, right, Kim?
Yeah, yeah, you do. I was worried about you.
I go through brick walls to get. Oh, really?
Yeah, you were
wow,
missing for a while.
MIA, I say. No, but I was worried about my ramps and all. You know,
yeah, with the hurricane. What happened with the hurricane? With the hurricane, did you take up the ramp so they wouldn't get caught with the hurricane in August?
Well, that's individual towns' responsibility, and yes, they did. I went around and checked. Yes.
Okay. Good. All right.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm going to let you. I just wanted the people to know that if they come down, it's Central Florida, Pinellas County, and Pasco County, there are ramps that I personally put in. I was the person that made sure they got it for people with disabilities because I have a severe disability too. I was in a very bad accident. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
you have
it's
a great
good
night.
To know. Wait a minute, Michael. It's
what?
Really good that you come on and tell us that because, you know, people are looking for vacation destinations and ones that are accessible. And I can't think of anything sadder having been to the beach a number of times and feeling that ocean spray, you know, and the water splashing up. I can't imagine being down that way and not being able to be close enough to feel that. So it's a great service that you provide and a great destination for those of you listening for a place to go visit.
Yes.
So thank you.
Yes, it's always beautiful down here. Yes, and I'll speak to you guys more next week. All right, I love you all. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you, Kim.
Hi, Michael.
For having me
nice
on.
Nice to hear you.
You bet.
Nice to hear you.
Happy Valentine's
and
Day,
you,
and
Maria.
We'll have prayers for your mom.
Yeah.
Exactly. And thank you, Maria. I appreciate it.
Okay. I'm glad to hear your voice,
okay.
Maya.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Love you.
Always is. Love you back. All right. Good night, sweetie. Okay, I almost muted you. He hung up fast, and I was just going to mute him, and he was gone. You almost got it. Okay, we've got some folks in the chat room, and tonight Dr. Maria and I are going to be talking about, it's kind of a neat arrangement. A lot of you know about my regular co-host, the second Wednesday of each month, Karen, and Simon, who's been ill for quite some time, hasn't been here for about 6 months. I'm hoping we'll be back the last Wednesday of this month. But with Dr. Maria, she's very busy with her job, life, everything else. But every now and then, she'll come across something that really resonates with her and gives me a call and says, have a show idea. And she was talking to me about building trust in relationships, I thought, well, no time like now with Valentine's Day next week, whether it's, you know, like I said in the intro, it's a time that a lot of us think of romantic partners, but it's not really just that. And I did the reminder of all those Valentines we handed out to everybody in grade school, I think it was. It's really just a time to honor love and respect and build quality relationships. And one of the biggest elements in doing that is trust, whether it's a love interest, a family member, a personal friend, a business associate, any kind of relationship hinges on the amount or level of trust involved. So with that, I'm going to pass the mic over to Maria and let her tell us how the idea germinated with her and let her rip.
A friend of mine just texted me that about her mother having a blood clot in her leg. I just need to tell her that I can't talk right now, all right? So she just texted
okay,
me.
That's fine. You take your time. Take your time, and I'll keep going for just a minute. Ron in the chat room, did you get those little Valentines when you were a kid? Do you remember getting the box? They were flat. You know, maybe 25, 10, I don't know how many were in the box, but I remember filling those in. Yeah, I figured you were of age to have had that. I don't know if kids even do that kind of thing. I'm so far removed these days. They probably send each other a text or don't do anything at all. I'm not sure what they do about it. But all of us of a certain age, which we all are here, remember that. And it was just kind of a fun day, a fun way of spreading the love and having some laughs, and you wanted to make sure that you got one of those Valentines. I guess those were the quote-unquote likes of back in the 50s, 60s, whenever it was we were doing that. But in any case, yes. You got yours. Well, happy Valentine's Day to the chat room and to everybody out there. We'll actually be having a show next week on Valentine's Day, but, you know, Karen and I have done shows on sex. This week we're doing shows on relationships, Dr. Maria and I. And next week the show actually is not going to be about Valentine's Day. I'll wish you all a happy Valentine's Day next week, but we're going to be talking about something dangerous to your health that all of us are taking part in these days. And we've talked about it before for the last decade about cell phones and the damage that they can do, but I read a really interesting new article, and they talk about not having done enough research to answer certain questions, and now they're shutting off the funding for any more research. Now, this was a decade ago. I can pull up shows from a decade ago where we talked about this, and it kind of reminds me of the NFL. When they find out that something is very wrong and has the potential to create terrible havoc with our health, when they decide to stop funding it and talking about it, it means they know damn well that it's inherently very dangerous and there's a lot of money involved. And then we get back to the old money and greed. Not good for any of us. So we're going to talk a little bit about that next week, and I think Maria is ready to talk about relationships this week.
Yes.
Okay.
I forgot to tell my friend that I was not to contact me tonight, but I was just with her about an hour or so ago, and we were talking about her concerns regarding her mother and her mother having a blood clot and all that. So just wanted to answer her quickly. Mm.
I'm glad you did.
What you were talking about, Kim, was creating belonging. When we were giving the Valentine's cards to everybody,
mm-hmm.
we were creating belonging, okay? And that's one of the relational skills, okay? That's basically we each have our own style of like letting people into our relational sphere. Okay. It could be a smile, you know. It could be, you know, like we can create belonging for one another, like even in the traffic. If you see somebody trying to get into the lane and you pause and you let them in, you're creating belonging. You're creating a little bit of joy in that for that person right then and there. And so it's a very selfless thing to do. But it creates joy in both people, doesn't it? When you do something like that selflessly, it creates a little bit of joy in both people. And so, you know, I don't know if kids these days, give Valentine's to everybody in the class that they used to when we were kids. But I think that was a wonderful thing to do. So it's when people start excluding people that, you know, people start getting suicidal and everything, you know, and bullying and all that. We need to teach children to create belonging for one another, particularly those who don't, you know, who are different and don't you know, don't belong. You know, I mean, who can be isolated? And, I mean, I think that a lot of people with brain injury know what that's like because, you know, especially with, like, our old friend group, it's not exactly the same as it was. We're not exactly the same people we were. And a lot of people lose friends because of that. So we need to be, you know, prepared to, you know, to offer belonging to everyone. And even, you know, and to, and that's one, I mean, not to every, I mean, you don't do it indiscriminately, okay? But that's one thing, because if you wait for someone else to create belonging for you, you might be waiting forever, okay?
So yeah.
If you don't have, you know, it says in the Bible, it says if anyone wants to have a friend, they need to show themselves friendly, okay? And I remember I was a really lonely little girl growing up, and I didn't know how to create belonging with other people, and it was something I had to learn over time to do. But you know, I was an immigrant's child. We did things differently, you know. Always it was us versus them and everything. So, you know, anyway, what you were saying is something called creating belonging. And what we're going to talk tonight, the skill that I wanted us to talk about tonight is something that builds trust in relationships. And that is when we pay attention to what the other person might be feeling. And start to recognize their overwhelm cues, okay? And learn to respect them and to, take a pause, okay? So, for example, let's think about tickling, okay? Some children love to be tickled, okay? And usually it's because they are being tickled by somebody who knows when to stop, right?
Yeah.
If children are routine, you know, if the first person that tickles a child doesn't stop, okay, it becomes a traumatic experience. Okay?
Yeah.
So, thing, okay, we need to learn to recognize, like the parent who tickles a child needs to recognize when the child is getting over, you know, slightly, just starting to get overwhelmed and stop, okay? In doing that, the child can build trust, okay? And they trust that, you know, that the parent will, you know, won't overwhelm them, okay? So some, you know, but I know that a lot of kids, they were tickled, like, by their older brother or sister, and they were, you know, mercilessly, right? You know, it was a way to control, okay? It was a way to control, and that was overwhelming to them because whoever that older brother or sister or you know, cousin was, did not stop when the person, you know, when the child needed to stop. So, you know, tickling for a lot of people was a traumatic experience, okay? And actually, that's one of the exercises they have us do at Thrive. Not at Thrive, but they suggest that couples do, is to tickle one another, okay? And to recognize when to give the other person a break, okay? And so learning to take these little pauses, like in ordinary conversations, okay? If someone's, you know how you get together with somebody and you're happy to see them and, you know, get together for dinner or something, and then maybe something's going on in their life, and they just keep on going and going and going and going and going, and you just get to the point where you wish they would stop, okay?
Yeah.
Well, at that point, your relational circuits are overwhelmed. You just, it's not like you don't care about the person. You do care about the person, okay? But at that moment, your nervous system is, like, overstimulated, okay? And you just need a little bit of a breather, okay? So if you're in that sort of situation, it's good to say, you know, I just, you know, I really care about you, okay? I mean, figure out a way to kind of give yourself a break and also give them a little bit of a signal that you need a break, And I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying this by ear right now. But like, say, you know, Glenna, I need to go to the bathroom. You know, you could just say that. I just need to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. And you go to the bathroom and you take some deep breaths and you try to get to the point where, you know, like your nervous system, because you can feel yourself a little bit agitated or anxious and upset, right? So just take some deep breaths, calm down, you know, and then, you know, once you're feeling like at peace, your heart rate slower, you're breathing a little bit slower and you can feel peaceful, then you go back to the conversation. But the thing is, if you didn't go overwhelmed to begin with, if that person knew to give you, to recognize that little bit of a cue that you were getting overwhelmed, and they gave you that break, okay, then you wouldn't have had to go to the bathroom to do that, okay? Does any of this make sense?
Yes, it absolutely does. In fact, what I was thinking was where we differed, I could relate so much, was going out the back door. I have to go to the bathroom and going out the back door. But no, you were just talking about taking a breather and going back. But that is difficult. I've never really mastered. I've got a couple people in my life like that that don't recognize those cues in me. And I used to try to say something about it, but they were so centered on what they wanted to get out. Like in the example that you gave, take the example you gave. You come back from the bathroom and they get right back on it and are going. And then I decided I would try a new approach. And that was just instead of saying something that they were automatically going to go on the defensive about, I went silent. It's better to not apologize for something you didn't say. And okay. The silence, I found, has made at least one of the people escalate because I'm not throwing out something to punch back at.
Okay. And are you finding that's helping in this particular situation? Or you're saying it's escalating, it's making them more upset?
Yes.
Okay.
B.
So,
B.
Yeah, B.
It feels like a no-win to me. It's a boundary issue, I guess. You mentioned control. There's some of that involved, too, so...
Yeah, and so, you know, what, do you love this person? Is this somebody you want to have a relationship with?
Yes, very much, but it's, there's only so many times you can go to the bathroom.
So it's something that, you know, maybe we could talk about offline, but, so, obviously, you need to protect yourself, okay? And if you can't stay in conversation with somebody because they're consistently overwhelming you, somehow you've got to let them know. And it may offend them. It may make them upset. But I think it's better to let them know than just to go silent, okay? So, for example, my oldest son, okay? He comes home from work, like 11. He's scheduled till 10. He comes home about 10:30. You know, he will, you know, want to engage me in conversation, but 10:30, I'm really tired. Okay. I'm really tired. It depends on the amount of energy I have, whether I can go there with him or not. Okay. I mean, if it's just chit-chat, I can do that. Okay. But if there's something on his mind and it's upsetting and wanting me to talk about, you know, how horrible life is and, you know, and how things are not working out at work, then I get overwhelmed, okay, especially late at night, okay? But, for example, and he started to, he has, I mean, this we've been, we did these, we did, not just now, but, I mean, this went on for a very long time where, like, he was, I don't really want to talk about, I mean, I don't want to, but he was in depression as a teenager, and he was quite upset that he could never bring himself to talk to this girl, okay? And he was, you know, he was, and I didn't know that this was the problem, okay? He never said that was the problem. But he was always saying how horrible life was, how horrible he was, and how nobody liked him, and, you know, and I could, you know, and he, you know, he was like, I just want to, why should I live? And there was, you know, some suicidal ideation going on, which was alarming me. And it was like eating up all my emotional energy, okay? And I didn't know how to, I didn't know how to protect myself, okay? And he didn't know how to protect me either, okay? And it was eating up all my emotional energy, okay? But we have since learned the skill, okay, of recognizing, he recognizes, like, when my eyes start to glaze over, okay, that mama, okay, that he protects, he has learned to protect me from himself, okay? And that's a very important skill to learn, okay? So we need to learn to protect other people from ourselves, okay? And that is, you know, recognizing when they're overwhelmed emotionally. So, and taking the cue. So one of the ways we practiced this at Thrive was in track two, was learning to come back to joy from negative emotions. And the emotion that we did, so my husband and I sat across from one another, okay? And two other couples were looking on, okay? So the two other couples were kind of like a safety net, okay, for the exercise, okay? And I had to make, to think of a mildly angry situation, something that made me mildly angry, okay? And just think about it, okay? And we're sitting, you know, we're sitting, I don't know how many feet apart, like maybe 3 feet apart, you know, facing one another. And I'm supposed to, like, close my eyes and think of something that, you know, a mildly angry situation, and then kind of make that, open my eyes, put that expression on my face, and gradually, like, lean towards him, you know, with that expression on my face, okay? I had to stop moving closer when I recognized that my, if I recognized an overwhelm cue in my husband, okay? And the other two couples were supposed to look on, and if they saw that I was missing a cue, then they needed to stop, okay? They needed to tell me to stop. And so that was a very useful exercise because I did not know, I was not recognizing my husband's overwhelm cues, okay? And so, you know, we would repeat the exercise until I recognized when to stop. Okay. And then, the next portion of the exercise is once I recognized his cue that, and got it right. Okay. About when to stop. Okay. Then the next time we did it, I was told to go a little bit further. A little bit further, like maybe, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 seconds further than I did the overwhelm cue, and then feel in myself what, you know, because it was like I was bullying him at that point, okay? And once you recognize the overwhelm cue and you go beyond it, you become a bully in that situation, okay? But people with brain injury often don't recognize these cues. And they're often very subtle, and it was like a pursed lip, okay, or it was like his eyes would twitch, okay, or he would like kind of little bit like he would move back just a slight amount, okay. So I used to overwhelm him. We don't get angry with each other. I mean, I hardly ever. This is never. said an unkind word to me in my life, okay? But I have to him, okay? And it doesn't happen often, but it used to happen more, especially when the kids were teenagers and there was a lot of disagreement on between us about how to handle certain things, okay? I read that couples are the most miserable in their relationship when their children are teenagers, and I can attest to that.
Yes, I'm sure that's true.
So,
kids are good at manipulating.
Oh, yeah.
Playing one against the other.
They know our cues, and they know our cues, and they can overwhelm us, okay? They know exactly how to push our buttons. And that's, you know, that's a cruel thing to do. And it's a cool thing for us to do to one another, okay? And so people with brain injury particularly should, we should learn to pay attention to this in our relationships. And one of the things you can maybe to get some feedback about whether or not you're doing that, you could say, what is it like to be in relationship with me? Do you feel that there are times where, you need a break and I don't give it to you? What is a signal that you can, we can agree on that if you need a break, you can put it up and then I know to back off and let you have a bit of a rest, okay? So these rests can happen just very naturally in conversation, okay? So, once you recognize, you kind of develop a rhythm in conversation where you're interacting and then you allow some room for quiet and then you're interacting. You have, these little brief pauses in conversation and kind of back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it's not one person dominating, okay? Because otherwise it's sort of like if you're on a tennis court, okay, and you were receiving the ball, okay, from the other person was serving, and they serve you one ball after another, da, 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 okay? And they don't let you serve it, hit one back, okay? It's kind of like that. You're being barraged, okay? So we need to, I don't have any really good suggestions about how you teach somebody else to respect your cues. Except to say that, I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed here. I need a little bit of a break. Maybe make it something about yourself rather than saying you are overwhelming me. Okay. So, I really want to be in relationship with you. But right now I just need a little bit of a break, but I'll come back. Okay. Something like that. Okay. Always promise to come back. Okay. Always promise to come back to the conversation. It might mean that you need to say, well, I think we've talked enough about this today. I really, don't feel like I can be at peace and discuss this anymore right now. I need a break. Maybe we can talk about this again tomorrow or something like that. Okay. Always, if you're needing to leave a conversation, if you're getting overwhelmed and the person's not catching your cues, maybe it's something you can kind of sort of teach them, but you have to be gentle. You have to be gentle with what's called shame messages. A shame message is like when you're giving a shame message, the person is feeling like you don't want to be with me, okay? And that can make them even more angry. And that's what's happening perhaps with that situation you were saying. It's like instead of interacting, you're going silent. And well, that's called stonewalling, okay? Rather than doing, because that's also almost a sign of contempt. Like people will take that as a sign of contempt. And you're wanting to be there because you love this person, but they're overwhelming you. And what probably would be better is whoever the person is, say, I need a break. I'm sensitive this way. Just don't make it about them. Just kind of like gently teach them about you, okay? And say, I'm feeling a little bit agitated right now or a little bit of a break. I'm tired. I don't feel like I can bring my best self to this conversation right now. That sort of thing, okay? Because if your relational circuits are off, okay, and, your eyes are glazed over and you're just – and that person now has become a problem, okay, like you're just wanting them to stop, then there's no point in – you know, it's, your relational circuits are off. You need to get them back on, okay, before you can meaningfully interact with that person again. So, I don't know. This, it's a way to. So we also like need to recognize ways in which we can overwhelm others as well, and be very, very attentive to that. So, I wish I had more examples in my head right now. I had wanted to sit down and do more prep. So
that's okay. You sent me. Go ahead and finish what you were saying. But eventually, do you have what you sent me initially to kick off this topic? Because I thought it would be cool if you read that, not this second.
Okay.
But
all right. Let me see if I can
kick
find
this
it.
Off.
Yeah. Let's find
it. It doesn't have to be now. You can finish what you were saying.
No, it's okay.
I just thought because it was kind of what kicked off the topic, and I thought it was really good and thought-provoking.
Yeah.
And you're right about
tired.
The other. Yeah.
I am tired because yesterday I gave a webinar to physicians on suicide and TBI, okay? And then I, here we go. So I was going to do a topic. Where is it? Building trust. Building trust. I'd like to do on this topic. Okay, so here it is. Let's see if I can find it. Here we go. I think it's, it's not available. Okay.
Oh, no.
It's not available. Okay. So.
It seemed like you typed it out in the private messenger, but anyway, go ahead.
Oh, did I text it to you?
No, it was in the private messenger on Facebook, and
yes,
we don't PM that often, so it wouldn't be up that far.
Yeah, I did. That's where I went to look for it, and I text and I pressed on it, and then it says not available. So find the message not available. So here I'm going to read this. I have a little bit of text about this in front of me. So knowing when to quiet ourselves and give others a break is essential to building trust. When family and friends know that we will not push them beyond their limits to engage, vulnerability or showing weakness becomes safe, and relationships go deeper. So skills to discover. Taking a breather. We skillfully take short pauses before people become overwhelmed. We read the nonverbal cues so we can build trust. As we interact with people, we learn to take micro rests throughout the interaction. This means we take moments to avert our gaze. Oh, that's another thing that's important. Yeah. This means we take moments to avert our gaze and break eye contact momentarily as we breathe deeply. This pause refreshes and resets us for more face-to-face interaction. These micro rest moments help us to keep the interaction at a manageable level of intensity. Do you know someone who doesn't stop talking, doesn't look away during interactions, or leaves you feeling depleted instead of restored? These symptoms are signs that this skill has dropped out of the interaction. Okay. So, and that's one of the skills. It's called taking a breather. And then another one is quieting interactively, which is knowing when to stop. Skilled reading of facial cues allows us to operate at high energy levels and manage our drives and impulses without hurting ourselves or others. In many ways, this skill is similar to the skill of taking a breather, what I just read. But interactive quieting addresses high energy interactions such as tickling, wrestling, splashing, joking, or playing. With interactive quieting, we watch facial cues to see if overwhelm is present or if we're quickly on our way at the top end of our ability to stay connected. When we reach the peak, we momentarily back off and briefly quiet before continuing the fun.
Do you know someone who quickly loses it during intense interactions or someone who cannot seem to stop once they start? Both taking a breather and quieting interactively build and restore trust in relationships. Okay, so I just thought of another example. Okay, so when I was in residency, okay, John was working overnights, okay? He would come home. I would leave for work before the kids got up. So I had to leave for work like 6:45 in order to be at work on time. And my mother would come over about 7, get the kids up, feed them breakfast. And John would get home around 7:30, okay, and drive them to school, okay? And then he would try to take a nap, okay? But, you know, between whatever, 8:30 and 2:30, which is not a whole lot of time, okay, when he had to go pick them up from school again, okay? And so then when I would come home from work, okay, which was typically around 7, okay, then he would try to go to bed to get a couple of hours sleep before he went to work at night. So it was like we were hardly seeing one another, okay? But, you know, we did what we had to do, okay, to get through that time. But what happened is when the kids were young, we were a very, like, easygoing family, okay? John and I never fought or argued, okay? And we were gentle with the kids. My friend Larry says that we were loving but permissive, We didn't provide a lot of structure. The kids obeyed us because they loved us, okay? And we were gentle with them, okay? But when they became teenagers, because they were three, they were all very close together. And when they were 9, 11, and 13, okay? And so they're three boys, and they're challenging me, okay? Like they're trying to say, Mama, why this or why that, okay? And the thing is, they're all really good at argument and debate, okay?
Yeah.
And here I am. I've had a long day, okay? And I can only handle so much, right? Okay? But here I am patiently answering, doing, trying to do whatever I need to do for them in the evening, you know, trying to think of what to do next, and they're wanting to engage, right? I mean, they naturally want to engage, but my relational circuits are dim, okay, because I haven't had a chance to rest, okay, and I did not recognize back then that I needed to, like, take 20 minutes when I came home to rest, and then so that I could be at my best for my kids, okay, but a point would come when all of a sudden, I'm engaged, I'm relational, and then would, like, my eyes would glaze. That's how my son says, my eyes would glaze, but they didn't know when to stop. And then all of a sudden I would, I would say, stop right now. Okay. Because I could not handle not one more interaction, okay? And they were like, what did we say or do to cause this? And was really not at that, when it first started happening, it wasn't anything specific. It was just their intensity. They were overwhelming me with the intensity of their reasoning and their arguments and whatever, okay? They were just being normal kids, okay? But I was overwhelmed because I was tired, okay? And I didn't know to respect my need for rest. And the only person who can respect your need for rest is yourself, okay? And I didn't know that back then, okay? I didn't know that back then. I was trying to do what all the other, like, I would compare myself to other mothers that when they came home, they would take their kids to soccer. They would do this. They would do that. They would, you know, they would get dinner together on the table. I mean, I was trying to do all the stuff, okay? But as a person with brain injury who's working full-time, I didn't have the energy to, you know, to be my best myself, okay? And I didn't, and I did not recognize that I needed to stop and to, so I wasn't my best self. And there were moments, okay? I know I slapped one of my sons once, okay? And I know I screamed at them, okay? And what does that do? Do to, you know, to the relationship, you know, what used to be a peaceful, loving relationship when a mother goes out of control, okay? So I, you know, things got very, I didn't, and for a person with brain injury, I could go from like 0 to 100 quickly, and it was taking me so much longer to, then every parent loses it with their kids, right? Okay. But for me, I would lose it at a lower threshold. And when I lost it, I became more like T-Rex. Okay.
Yeah.
I became like a T-Rex. Okay. When that's not my normal self. Okay. And so that's, I lost, you know, there was a lot of relational loss of trust in the relationship with my kids until I started learning these relational skills. Unfortunately, it was when the first time, when I first started learning this stuff, it was 2010. My oldest was 19, 17, and 15. And that's what I started learning about this stuff. But it took my oldest son and I have what I think is a secure relationship now. He knows when to, you know, we know how to interact and when to interact. And he also knows to protect me from himself because he can be pretty intense and he can be pretty dark. Okay. But he knows that, you know, that if he pushes me just a little bit too far, that I'm going to, you know, it's not going to, the conversation stops being productive. Okay. So he has learned
right.
to protect me from intensity. Okay. And we also need to learn to protect others from our own intensity as well. So, so that's because that's what's going to build trust in the relationship. So I did not know how to protect my children from my intensity. I didn't know when to back off. I didn't know how to recognize in myself that I was overwhelmed, okay? And so the number one skill, I would say that the most important skill that I learned to recognize when my relational circuits were off and to stop interacting in a, you know, just to remove myself from the conversation and to go to my room to rest or whatever, to get my relational circuits back on. So some ways that you can tell if your relational circuits are off. Okay, I got a list here somewhere. Let me see if I can find it. Because if your relational circuits are off, you're not going to be creating joy in the relationship. When you're happy to be with somebody and you're in a conversation and you're, like I said, everything is going well and you're happy to be with one another, then that produces like a relational joy, okay? But if your relational circuits start to go dim, then you're not feeling joy. You're feeling anxious and agitated, and it's not, you know, and your body's sort of like tensing up. And when you feel that in your body, that's your cue that you need to go. You need to take care of yourself. Okay, you need to take care of yourself. And And also, because if you keep on interacting, you are not going to be your best self. You're going to get like me. You could go T-Rex. So what tends to happen when our relational circuits go off, we either become predators or possums, okay? Or it's like the flight, fright, fight thing, okay? So
yeah.
People can be
it is.
People can be predators at different times. Everyone has the ability to be a predator. Everyone has the ability to be a possum, okay? You know, what we need to learn to do is to be consistently gentle protectors, okay? And to protect people from our own intensity. And people with brain injury can be very intense. So, I don't know. Do we want to? Is there a... is there a way that we could open this up for some conversation for people to, I don't know, we didn't discuss this before, but I was kind of thinking maybe this would be good to be a little bit more interactive for this. How much more time do
we have
left?
Well, if there's anyone, well, technically we have an hour, although we can end whenever we want, but if anyone in the chat or out there listening would like to call and throw your 2 cents worth in, the number's 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. If you've dealt with, you know, on that fight, flight, or freeze, then please do go ahead and call. Talk
okay.
about how
and
you make
so
your relationships
get,
better
yeah.
or challenges.
If your relational circuits are off is when that person becomes a problem that you want to get away from or attack. Okay. I just want to make a person problem or feeling go away. I don't want to listen to what the other person is feeling or saying. My mind is locked onto something upsetting. I don't want to be connected to them right now. I just want to get away or fight or freeze, or I more aggressively interrogate, judge, or fix other people. You're not curious. There's an acronym, and I think I've talked about this before, but one way you can know if your relational circuits are on is if you're curious about what they have to say, if you can feel appreciation for them, that's cake. Curiosity, appreciation, kindness, that you can be kind to them in what you say, and eye contact. If you're, you're in a mind meld with somebody and you're like having really, really enjoying a conversation, how you're like, your eyes are like connected to one another. And but if you overwhelm a person, they look away, that's a cue that you might need to give them a little bit of a pause. So, mm-hmm. So curiosity, appreciation, kindness, eye contact. That's a very easy way to recognize if your relational circuits are on. And then how to get them back on again. One way is to, let me see if I can find this. I have this book has a bit of a cheat sheet. It was on a bookmark and I can't find the bookmark. Maybe I moved the bookmark someplace else. Okay. So.
In a book?
Yeah. Well, anyway, cars. This one is cars. Okay. So cake is curiosity, appreciation, kindness, and eye contact. Okay. And, getting back on track. So connection. So you connect with
connection.
People. You connect with things or people that stabilize you. Okay. So here he's talking about connection brings us back to Mason. Okay, so here we go. The guy that wrote this book was showing a video. Okay. And it was a video, it was showing a video to a group, okay? And the group normally enjoyed this video. I mean, when he would present this video to a group, they would be, people really enjoyed it. But there was one person that the situation, the video kind of triggered them, okay? And I'll tell you the story. Let me see if I saw it someplace here. Years ago, I was attending at a training event. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed a shadowy figure looming over my shoulder. Before I could figure out the identity of this visitor, I heard a booming voice. "Chris, I have a bone to pick with you." His tone told me this was no joke. Every person sitting at this table paused their conversation. I recognized this individual as one of the attendees participating in the conference I was leading. Let's call him Mason. One glance at Mason's face told me everything I needed to know. The howling winds of adversity were about to change the course of my peaceful morning. I felt my shoulders tighten. A knot twisted in my stomach. I took a deep breath and then braced for impact. And Mason leaned in and let loose. How could you possibly play that video yesterday? What were you thinking? Mason was yelling at the top of his lungs. He was hot with anger. His whole face almost blazed with intensity. Mason's relational circuit was offline. What we call big emotions were spilling out. I quickly realized the short video I had played the previous day about a family suffering for their faith must have set Mason off. Normally, people enjoy this video, I thought to myself. The video depicted how to stay relational and loving under difficult circumstances. I was unsure why this video bothered Mason so much, but I knew it must have struck a nerve. I broke eye contact to look at my friends sitting at the breakfast table. Each person looked stunned. Their faces reminded me of deer caught in the headlights of an oncoming car. I knew this situation would require creativity. Mason needed his joy switch to access his relational self, which by now was missing in action. In this state, Mason's upset hindered him from noticing all of us as he had reached the threshold of our ability to stay connected. We were beginning to feel run over by Mason's intensity. I recognized I needed my joy switch to stabilize the situation. So I took a deep breath. I prayed for wisdom. Activating my relational circuit was crucial for what happened next, okay? And so how do you get your relational circuits back on? That's what he's calling the joy switch, okay? And so let me see if I can find where he tells the rest of the story. But anyway, he was able to, because he's practiced, okay, this is what he does. He teaches people about these things. Okay. Where was it? I found the rest of the story somewhere in this book.
Happened? So he went Rex and
everybody was uncomfortable. Yes, everybody was uncomfortable. So back on track.
While you're looking, I was just going to say
Okay, go ahead. Connection brings us back to Macy, troubled by the video I played about a family enduring hardship because of their faith. While I listened to Mason, I realized he needed connection to no longer feel alone in his distress. I used my words, face, voice, and body language to say, I'm here with you, friend. I see you. Connection often leads to rest. So I invited Mason to rest by holding up my two hands to signal a T for timeout. Okay. I said, Mason, this is important. Mason, this is important. I want to hear what you have to say, but can we first pause to catch our breath? Mason looked confused. He turned as if he was about to walk away. And I said, please don't leave. I want to hear what you have to say, but first let's catch our breath. Mason cautiously agreed. I said our breath. In order for Mason to hear, he was not alone. Mason stood there while I sat in my chair taking deep breaths. We both needed this pause. The attendees remained at the table frozen. Sitting there without talking felt like an eternity, yet the silence provided a needed breather. This purposeful pause to rest is the third element in this card sequence. Okay, so the first one is connection, A is appreciation, R is rest, okay? And it doesn't mean that it's in this order, okay? So after a short breather, Mason started to calm down. Connecting opened the door to resting. When I noticed Mason appearing peaceful, it was time for more attunement, okay, which is what we do when we connect with people who are hurting. I validated and affirmed Mason was upset. I could see on his face and hear in his voice how hurt he felt. I expressed my sadness that he was offended. I said, Mason, I am so sorry this happened to you. You are upset. I am sad this happened. If I had known you were going to be this hurt by the video, I would have warned you before playing it, or I would not have played the video in the first place. Mason needed connection and attunement where he felt seen, heard, and understood. If I slipped out of relational mode myself and had become defensive or tried to justify myself, this would have been disastrous, much like pouring gasoline on a fire. Mason would have felt alone and minimized. Instead, thankfully, I conveyed, Mason, I'm here. I'm with you here. You're not alone. I get it. You are really upset. Even though Mason perceived me as the source of his distress, I was in the position to share his upset, seen and understood. Once we fall into enemy mode during conflicts, we often go on the attack. So when he's talking about enemy mode, he's talking about when your relational circuits turn off. It doesn't mean that you're the person's enemy. It's just your relational circuits are off, okay? And that's when you become predator, you can become someone that you don't want to be, okay? So often we fall into many enemy modes during conflicts. We often go on the attack. We defend, we justify ourselves, we use our words to inflict pain, or we retreat and play dead. I guess that's your being quiet, right? So, you know.
Yeah, but it's only to avoid going T-Rex. I've got a question in your example. Don't lose your place if it goes on,
okay.
But this person approached, let's just call it you, whoever. The person approached a table full of people, so you were with other people. That wasn't really an appropriate time to involve these other people who obviously were very embarrassed and probably, I don't know if they were there for the video or had any clue about what was going on. I do see the merit in addressing that Mason is upset and that you're really sorry he's upset, and perhaps we can talk about this privately. Or at another time, or whatever you would say to validate, but not, not bring everybody else into it, because his upset, it was really kind of inappropriate to approach it the way that he did.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's not one right answer to the situation, okay? But let me finish reading the story. Actually, it's kind of, as mentioned before, one of the greatest threats to a working relational circuit is feeling alone. We inevitably feel alone when people try to fix our pain instead of listening, validating, and sharing our distress. Trying to fix upset so it'll go away is a classic error well-intentioned people make while trying to be helpful. People do not need us to fix their distress. Rather, people need to feel connected so they become relational. Another classic mistake happens when people try to talk out their problems when their relational circuits are off. It's easy to think we can resolve our differences if only you could understand me, see my position, or hear me out. Trying to talk out problems when we are relationally offline means that we will amplify the distress rather then resolve the conflict. All of us can relate to times we try to resolve a conflict by getting someone to understand this, only to have the conflict become one thing. Just sitting with Mason in quiet and rest, I attuned by validating his feelings. I acknowledged Mason was hurt and upset. Mason needed someone who could stay connected with him during intense emotions. I apologized for the way he felt hurt from the previous day. I watched as Mason listened. With each passing moment, Mason looked calmer and more relational. In less than 2 minutes, Mason felt seen, heard, and understood. Mason returned to relational mode. With a smile and a nod, Mason said, "Thank you, Chris," and walked away. Mason's relational engine was firing on all cylinders. I turned to my friends at the breakfast table and reviewed the interaction. This was a great learning opportunity for you. While the interaction was intense, the group had observed a live transition from enemy mode back into relational mode. At the end of the conference, Mason's wife approached me to share appreciation for my interaction with him. She said, normally when this happens, we have to leave the conference, but you helped Mason. This week was life-changing for us. Apparently, this video activated a landmine from Mason's childhood where he felt unprotected by his family. When we say relational, we can join people in their distress without needing to fix it or become defensive. We find creative ways to put out relational fires. But the most important thing is this guy, the guy who wrote this book.
Mm.
I mean, he's practiced this, you know. So he did not, his relational circuit did not turn off. And he could still see Mason to be, you know, a person who was worthy to be loved and cared for in that moment. Okay. So he was able to catch the intensity. So what's important for us to understand is not to shame ourselves if we can't handle the intensity. If we can't handle the intensity, we need to respectfully, like, you know, not interact. Okay. So Mason,
right.
Okay. So, I mean,
It was great the way the story ended, though, because everybody else got to learn something and it wasn't their confrontation. You know, they got to watch and learn, like you say, like you read,
how
it works. So that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Chris is the one who wrote the book, okay, and he's the one who's in charge of this training that I did, okay? And I mean, he's been practicing for years, okay? He's been practicing. He and his wife, Chris and Jen Corsier, are in charge of the Thrive training that I keep on talking about. And I've posted things by him, if you've seen it on Facebook, okay? But in any case, if Chris felt overwhelmed, okay, probably the best thing to do at that point would have said, Mason, I can see that you're really upset. Can we schedule a time to discuss this, okay? I really want to discuss this with you, but, you know, we kind of need to, you know, let's plan a time that we can discuss this, okay? So, but in that case, he was able to stay relational, okay? You know, you've got to respect and recognize your own limitations too. Okay, so like my daughter-in-law, okay, for example, my daughter-in-law can overwhelm me, okay, and it used to be that I would let her, okay, and then I would get upset, okay, and I would start crying like a baby, okay, nobody else would make me cry, okay, but my daughter-in-law could make me cry, okay. And, of course, it brought the end, you know, here I am, a grown woman, 30 years older than her, okay, and I'm crying like a baby, okay, because of something that she did, I mean, said, because I would allow her intense, it always had to do with something political, okay, all right, or I said something and it was something that she would take the wrong way, okay, and she would, like, anyway, I don't want to get into the situation, but, and so our last time that we were together, I mean, I've learned over time to say, I'm not going there. Okay. That is not how I meant it. And I'm not going there. Okay. I kind of put my hand up like a pause. Okay. And I'm like, not going there. Okay. Yeah. Just kind of put an end to the interaction before it even, you know, kind of, like, I recognize that she's about to overwhelm me and then just stop, okay? It's like I'm not going there. And I've learned to do that with my second son and her are the ones that kind of do that to me. They're very, you know, they've got leftist views. Let's put this, so they're to the left, okay? And they can make something big, huge thing out of something that I meant very innocently, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, for example, I'll tell you one of the situations. Okay, it's kind of ridiculous. Okay, we went out for dinner. Okay, I was in Kansas City, and my second son and his sister-in-law, my daughter-in-law, went out to dinner because Peter, her husband, had to work. Okay, So we go out to this restaurant and order our food. And I look at my plate and I'm like, ooh, this is too much food. And I looked at Timothy's, you know, at my second son's plate. And I was like, you know, they should make servings for women a bit smaller than for men. I was just like, innocent. It wasn't, you know what I mean? I wasn't. And then
They launched into me.
Don't you know how women have had to fight for their equality and all that? It was, and they just, it was a barrage. Okay, here I am. Here I am, a woman who was told by my chemistry professor in college he wouldn't even see me because girls can't do math. I mean, can't do chemistry. Okay? So here, I mean, they're preaching this to me. Okay? But they were relentless. Okay? And I was trying to defend myself and, you know, and explain to them. But they were just like, you know, I mean, they were just going on and on and on and on and on. They were not, they were using their intensity to overwhelm me. They were not protecting me, okay, from their intensity. And so I, you know, basically I started crying, and I cried all the way home, okay. I couldn't stop crying, okay. And I mean, you know, and I'm like, you know, here I am, the adult here, okay. And yet I'm crying like a little baby, okay. And I'm trying to think the Thrive stuff, okay. I appreciate them. I love them. I want to see the best in them, okay? But they didn't protect me. You know what I mean? So it's my job to protect myself, and that's what I've learned to do. I've learned not to allow them to overwhelm me, to kind of exit and say, no, I'm not going there. That's not my nomad. You've taken it wrongly, and we're not discussing this anymore. And you know what? It works.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. I'd tend to be more Rex about that, but I don't really discuss politics much, especially stupid things like that.
Yeah, but people
don't
even
post
is about the size of a meal, and that was just an innocent statement.
That's what I mean. It wasn't anything worth a lecture, you know, or a political speech about, you know. I would have just said, eat your food, you know, eat your meal. Shut up
and
eat your meal.
Yes. And so here I am, the one who wants to stay connected and engaged. And what I need to learn to do is, I mean, what I needed to learn to do is when to disconnect. Okay, so... Actually, we just spent, she and I spent 2.5 days together in January, all by ourselves, okay, and we didn't overwhelm one another. In fact, it went really, really nicely. So I'm very thankful that I think my son was a little bit, we went to Disney, okay, and things did not go smoothly, actually. Out of 2.5 days, I had 2 ER visits. One to rule out a clot in my leg, okay? And the other because another thing is I was on steroids for really bad asthma, okay? And it was causing some side effects where, you know, was basically I was not exactly myself. And, but I felt fine, and I got on this ride. This is an intense ride at Epcot, okay? And they had a lighter version of the ride, and they had the intense version of the ride. And me, I always choose the intense, okay? But I didn't realize that, you know, I'm physically, and actually during the ride, I had a great time. It was a flight simulation to Mars, okay? And I loved the ride.
Oh, I've been on that.
Okay, you've been on that. Mm-hmm. Okay. When I got off, I was like, oh, I want to do this again. Maybe not right away, but maybe at the end of the day we should try to do this again. But as I'm getting off, I'm feeling a little bit lightheaded and shaky. And I was like, Sierra, I need to sit down for 5 minutes, okay? So I checked my watch, okay? I have an Apple Watch. And I'm like, okay. I checked my heart rate, and it was like 120-something. And my pulse is usually... like 70, you know, I mean, my baseline is 59, but during the day it should be like, you know, between 60 and 80, but 120, I'm like, oh no, am I having atrial fibrillation? So I look at the you can check your EKG on the Apple Watch, and I can read an EKG, and it says no, normal sinus rhythm, but I did see what's called premature ventricular contraction. Okay, and I was like, ooh, that's a little bit uncomfortable, and then I checked my pulse again, and it was like 39. I'm like, what's going on here? So basically, they wheeled me to the first aid tent. To the first aid place. Okay, so I was feeling kind of shaky. Another thing that happened is my husband helped me put together my supplements the night before, and he'd accidentally put in 2,000 milligrams of chromium. I'm supposed to take 1,000 milligrams of chromium, for pre-diabetes. Okay. To help with glucose metabolism, okay? But he accidentally put 2,000 milligrams rather than 1,000, okay? It's one pill versus two, okay? Two pills versus one. And it was bottoming out my glucose, okay? So that was one thing that was happening, okay? The other thing was the intensity of the ride, the G-force or whatever, kind of set me off, okay? They took me to the first aid place, and I laid down, they gave me some power, some power aids, and then they did an EKG. And the paramedics, by that time, I'd rested for half an hour, so I was feeling better. The paramedics came and did my EKG, and they said it was fine. And I was feeling a lot stronger now, okay? And, I had told Sierra that go and enjoy, I'm being taken care of now. You don't need to take care of me. Just go and enjoy and come back in an hour and a half or two. Well, she's upset. And she doesn't enjoy herself, okay? And she comes back to the tent. I'm like, okay, Maria, you've got to take better care. I was feeling hangry even before the ride, and we had stopped to eat lunch, and I felt fine. Okay, but she says, it's not just the ride, she said, you were not right even before the ride, okay? And she says, you're trying to be your own doctor now, and you need to go, you need somebody else to be your doctor. And I was like, you're right. So we went to, there was a van that took us to the hospital, and I was in the ER, and they did an EKG. They did, they did troponins to rule out a heart attack because it looked like a cardiac event. Okay, and everything came back negative, but I was still, But she's like, Maria, I this was supposed to be her dream trip. She never got to go to Disney. Okay, and here out of 2.5 days, we were twice in the ER. And so it kind of messed up her dream, And so she was kind of in a little bit of an ego state, a child ego state, and I could understand. So, it was like, you spoiled my trip. I mean, she didn't say it in so many words, okay? But, yeah, I felt bad spoiling her trip, okay? And then I could get upset and say, how dare you be upset? I couldn't get upset, but instead I chose to attune to her. And I told her about a time when John and this was back in Kansas City before I did my rehab with Larry, and I had worked hard all summer, okay? And other people went out of – there were two pathologists who would go out of town in July and leave three of us holding the bag. And I was the only one who could do what's called five-needle biopsies. And anyway, every summer was really, really hard in Kansas City, and we didn't get to do anything fun, okay? And because I was working so many hours. And anyway, on Labor Day, John and I decided to go to Lake Jacomo and canoe, okay? That was going to be like our, a fun expedition. But that day it was really windy, and they wouldn't let the boats go out. And I started to cry like a baby. And the thoughts that were crying, going through my mind were like, I never get to have fun. It was like a child ego state. Okay, I was in a child ego state. I never get to have fun. All I get to do is work, okay? And my husband could have shamed me. He could have said, how, you know what I'm saying? He to shame you, okay? Why are you acting like a small child? But instead, he's like, Maria, let's go for a walk. And we went on a hike, okay? And I had done a little bit of this drive at that point, and one of the things that they talk about is appreciation. So I found, by the end of the hike, I found like 100 things that I could appreciate. But if we'd gone on the canoe and we had not gone on this hike, I would not have seen this yellow jacket, okay? This, you know, I would not have seen this squirrel. I would not have seen this, I was looking for things to appreciate along the way, okay? And
yeah.
It didn't take that long for my relational circuits to come back on board and not to be blubbering anymore and just to enjoy the rest of this hike with my husband. And we had a wonderful time. It wasn't what I wanted, okay? I was still disappointed about not canoeing, but we were, you know, he helped by tuning to me, okay, not getting upset with me, not trying to shame me, but helping me to come back to joy by staying connected with me, okay? And then
yep.
I deliberately used appreciation. And then with the other cards, the R and the S, let me look up actually that's a good story.
We do have a question.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Somebody did call in, so yeah. They've been there for a while, but it is good to look for the silver lining always. Area code 336, who's this? You're on the air. Are you muted? Because I've got you unmuted here. I saw that you pressed.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yes.
That was odd. That's all right. No, I remember calling in a few months ago, and I remember speaking to, I think it was you and a gentleman, so not to, you know, get off topic here, but I remember we talked about convalescent homes and the home care problem that we have in this country. And, you know, I don't know if you remember or not, but I was telling you I was going to be running for North Carolina House of Representatives here in my district, and I am now. I'm on the ballot, and so the primary is actually next month. But I wanted to let you know that if I'm, you know, elected, I still have not forgotten about your issue, and that will be one of the issues I bring up here in my state, North Carolina, about the home care, and try to abolish it and get rid of it. So I've actually been doing some research and looking into it, and the abuse and the mishandling of funds, the money that's stolen, it's actually quite a rabbit hole. So I just wanted to let you know, that's why I just wanted to check in with you, and just, I know it's been a few months since we spoke.
I'm glad that you did, and why don't you tell me, just because there are people from North Carolina here, and we do like to support people who have disabilities if we can. I like to support veterans if I can. Do you want to say your name, and the people listening from North Carolina can make sure if they don't know about your platform that they look into it before the vote?
Sure. I'm in Rockingham County, District 65. My name is Joseph Gibson III, and I'm running for District 65 in Rockingham County for North Carolina House of Representatives. And basically, I'll be honest with you, just Google my name. You'll see all my I got a few websites up, and I do a podcast also. Actually, I do a podcast on this platform, Blog Talk Radio, on Tuesdays at 7 p.m., called Restoring Our Republic, Real Solutions. So I've been talking a lot about campaign issues, obviously, now because of the primary season and me running for office, and this obviously being an important election year, 2024. I think it's one of the most important election years in this country's history with what's going on in this country. So just look me up, and if you're from Rockingham County, come out March 5th and vote for me. And I have one guy that's my opponent, Reese Pirtle, and I stand for restoring our republic, constitution, and trying to, I guess you could say, drain the swamp and get rid of the swamp and make sure it's extinct forever. You know, don't let it come back,
well,
because it seems like
you.
When you start cleaning up, and it comes back.
Yeah, it sure does. Well, thank you, Joseph, for calling in. And
you're welcome.
I might check out your podcast. When you said 7, what time zone?
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that'd be Eastern Standard
okay.
Time. Yeah.
And what's your show called?
It's called Restoring Our Republic. And
I'm sorry,
you, just type
you said that,
in. That.
Thanks for repeating.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. I understand. Well, thanks for letting me check in with
well,
you, and
brain
I appreciate
injury
you giving me
radio.
Your platform.
Thank you,
there you
Joseph,
go. Hey.
And good luck.
All right,
we'll
thank you. God bless.
For you.
All right,
and
take
you
care.
As well. Thanks.
Okay.
Cool.
So,
yeah, that's cool. All right.
So I finished, I told Sarah this story, and you know what? She felt attuned to because I matched her state.
Yeah.
Again, because
I do.
Okay, and she felt attuned, and she said she felt incredibly close to me. Not right then, but she really appreciated my telling her that story. And I actually didn't tell her about the walk. I actually didn't even tell her about the walk, okay, and then finding the things to appreciate. I just told her about crying like a baby. And I think we were interrupted at that point, but we had such a good time in the ER. It was amazing, okay, because
oh,
we were joking.
God.
No, it was.
I can't equate a good time in an ER, but that's
the nurses,
okay.
the thing is, the nurses were coming, and they couldn't believe that we were mother and daughter-in-law, okay? But, you know, we were able to take this situation where she was, like, really disappointed, okay, and yet turn it to a positive. And what ended up happening, it was, like, because the next day we were supposed to go to Universal Studios. And I didn't understand what was happening with the chromium, okay? But it had happened the day before to a lesser extent, and then it happened that day. And actually the ER doctor thought it was just the side effects of the steroids, and I think that was part of what was going on. But basically, you know, she's like, so I was like, you know, Sierra, I think, you know, I was gonna fly Peter down, her husband, to finish out the trip with her, okay? So I called, she said Peter can't come because at his job, he's the only person who can do what he does. The other person's out. So I called my husband. And it happened that my oldest son was home. I didn't know that my oldest son had taken the whole week off. I knew he took off Monday and Tuesday to spend with Sierra, but I didn't know he'd taken off Saturday and Sunday as well. So this is Saturday afternoon. I'm Saturday, like at 4 o'clock. And I was like, John, you know, I need to be picked up. I mean, sorry, you know, I'm not doing well. Okay, I'm in the ER. And then he told me that Jesus was home. I was like, okay, why don't you and Christos is my oldest son's name, and say, why don't you guys come, and you can take me home, and Christos can go to Universal Studios tomorrow with Sierra. And that's what happened, okay? So John took me home, and my son finished out the trip with his sister-in-law. They had good, they had good brother and sister-in-law. She was a big sister to three sisters, and she has this ability to really make her brothers-in-law feel like she's paying complete attention to them. She has this really good way about her, okay? And so I could see what they all look. I mean, everybody loves her, okay? But she is kind of dramatic in a sense, okay? But in any case, what ended up being, you know, a very disappointing situation ended up, you know, there was some redemption of it, okay? And actually, after we left the ER, they discharged us. We went to Calabas. We had a nice family meal. And then Jesus and Sierra went to the hotel or the place, you know, the resort. And my husband and I went home. And we sent them to stay at the resort so they could spend the day at Universal and then drive back to St. Pete the next morning. So, you know, so that's another example of, you know, I could have gotten offended and say, you know, why are you being upset? You know, I'm the one who's not feeling well here. You know what I'm saying? I could have, but instead I chose to tune to her, okay, and understood that she was overwhelmed by disappointment. She had this sort of, like, really, you know, expectation of a perfect Disney trip, okay, and it didn't end up being perfect. But I think in some ways, you know, she told me she appreciated getting to see me more human. Okay, because normally I don't, like, she got to see a little bit of the snarky side of me. That's another thing that came out, Okay, like she would say, like when I was feeling that hangry, and she would say, are you supposed to be eating that? I said, I already tried the protein bar. What I need now is some popcorn right now. That was the interaction earlier in the day. my glucose was bottoming out, and I was like, you know, I wasn't mean to her, but I was like, I didn't tell you about that, but I she saw some of like my not best self, but it wasn't a mean self, okay? And she said she liked the snarky Maria. So anyway, I was careful not to overwhelm her with my intensity. So. And I did not allow myself to be overwhelmed by her intensity, too. Instead, I attuned to her and helped her to come back to joy. And anyway, it ended up being a good trip and something that we'll remember. So,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I think that that's a good story overall. I'm sorry that you had a health scare, but as far as the canoe not working out, and the walk, I've had a lot of those things where it's a disappointment. You're planning on doing one thing, whatever it is, you know, you're making plans to do one thing and that doesn't work out. And so you have to do, well, you don't have to, you can keep crying and not move, but
yeah.
Your husband did do a good job not reacting but responding well to the situation that you were in. He was supportive of the situation you were in, and then plan B is oftentimes more fun, and you never know, you know, the weather being what it was, if you would have gotten in the canoe and been out in the middle of the water and then a storm came up really fast, something awful could happen. You know, instead you had the opportunity to practice some gratitude. I call those moments like stop and smell the roses moments, you know, being very aware of your environment. And especially when you, I'm just going to guess because you work in a lab that, it's, you probably get like that casino syndrome, you know, because you're inside probably without windows and you're very focused on what's in front of you. And
I didn't have
it's
a window
probably,
in my office. Yes, I didn't have a window in my office. And yes, I'm working long hours, you know, So
and then getting tired, you rush by, you know, you kind of rush by the roses and the environment's just kind of there, something you pass through. And so to be able to have those peaceful moments that nature can bring, you know, that was a really good solution. So I encourage people, we all go through disappointment, but to try to look for the good and not get stuck in the hole of the disappointment or the, you know, the not getting our, what we thought, what was our way, you know, because we can get in our own way. But that was good. Both of the stories were actually very good. The conflict resolution in Mason and Chris's story and the way that was handled and the alternative way that you broached, but using it as a learning example, exactly the way the story went, I think was great. And, you know, the breakfast thing, like I said, I don't think I would have cried about it. You know, on the air, there's a lot of talk, not on my show, really, hardly never, but there's one show that I listen to on our network, and they talk about politics all the time, and people get so, you can just watch the tail chasing, you know, nobody's going to change their mind, you know, it's just this talk about burning out circuits. You know, it's just like neither
yeah.
party is going to change their mind. They're trying to sell a good that the other one's not going to buy. You know,
and
the minds
and
are...
And once the racial circuits are off, there's no point, there's no reasoning.
Right,
once,
right.
Once
there's...
racial circuits are off, there's no point in continuing the conversation. Okay? Nothing
yeah.
is accomplished. Okay? Nothing is accomplished. And actually, that's kind of something that I in a, starting with the pandemic, I really started paying attention to the news cycle a lot, where before I was not, okay? And
me too.
And I found myself, I mean, there are times, I was kind of wax and wane, but I keep on coming back to it. And back in September, October, just a few months ago, I decided that I was going to, like, take a fast. Because I was, you know, it was like I was spending every, like I was spending every spare minute, like in my evening or whatever, listening to YouTube video about this or that or whatever, often about politics, sometimes about science or whatever. And I just decided, you know, I need some space just to think, just to be me. And you know what? I did an experiment. I was like, oh. And I found myself being more like creative. And innovative,
mm-hmm.
and having time just to think and be peaceful, and it's amazing. This is not on topic, but it's amazing how much clearing out periods of rest in my day. I mean, I'm like, I don't watch any of that stuff anymore. I might like on a Friday night or something, but found that it's like my brain has woken up. And I'm able to do, you know, projects. I mean, first of all, I was working
yeah.
so hard for so long, right? And then for the last year, I've had more of like an 8 to 4:30 job or 9 to 5:30. And so finally my brain has had a chance to recover, but I'm also, you know, I'm also making space to rest and to relax, and it's waking up like, you know, the boredom, allowing yourself to be bored, okay, actually awakens creativity, okay, and starts
yep.
the brain thinking of different things. And so, yeah, I've entered a really productive period at work. I mean, I'm writing grants, and I'm starting to write papers, and doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much more time I have on this, what's called a detail, before I go back to the lab or whatever. But I've done a lot, and I've done like these. I did a presentation at the end of November called The Waltz of the Clueless, Brain Injury Survivors and Their Physicians. And it was a CME talk, continuing medical education talk for physicians.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Did I tell you about that? I think I told you I was going to do it. Okay. But it went
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
Okay. And
good.
Maybe I could give that talk, you know, like we won't have the PowerPoint.
That's what
I
was.
Yeah.
That's what I was
going to
say.
Yeah.
I'll look at dates
but,
next month, and if you think that's too soon, the following month. But when you mentioned it, I thought that would be a great idea. And I'm sorry I didn't ask, but I did wonder how that went.
It
and
went,
I did think about it when
well.
You told me.
It went incredibly well.
Great.
In fact, I gave it twice. I gave it for Rancho Los Amigos Rehabilitation, National Rehabilitation Center in California, and they asked me to be a subject matter expert for their webinar series for physicians on TBI. So actually, I gave another talk, I said yesterday, that was for them, and that was suicidality and brain injury. And that things about, especially with veterans with brain injury, their rate of suicide is four times that of civilians. Veterans without
mm-hmm.
TBI is twice that of civilians. But TBI
yeah.
is four times that of civilians. And TBI plus substance abuse is seven times that of civilians. So basically
mm-hmm.
I talk about the features of the characteristics of brain injury that make people more prone. And also my personal story, because I had two sessions, And then each of my sons, because of the way I was parenting them during their teenage years, each of them, I just told you the one story about my one son, but really the other two sons, there were other issues. Anyway, and the relational skills training and how it changed things around. And I would love to go into that in a more, you know, in a more program. I mean, like in a presentation, I don't get that, not to get waylaid, but I think it would really, it was very effective, and I think that your audience would enjoy it. So, yeah, we could do
that. I think so, too.
I mean, either, either one. I could do both. I mean, not the same night, obviously, but yeah, I'd be happy to do those talks and adapt them for a survivor audience. Obviously.
Great.
So.
I'll send you some dates tomorrow, the dates that I have opened, because I think that would be great. And I have a lot of veterans that listen to the show.
Okay.
Also, I seek out a lot of veteran guests, and so I get a lot of veteran listeners. And I agree with what you said. I was doing that. I still do. I switched a little. It's funny you said it in the way that you did. I was watching too much news, and I stopped that. And I used to only listen to YouTube for music videos, but I saw that they have a video on there for everything under the planet. I mean, throw a dart, pick a topic, and they got a video on it. So I did start watching some videos, and they were informative, but I know what you mean about the creativity, because a lot of that fills the brain. There's only so much capacity of information my brain can get filled with. And one thing I really wanted to do is, you know, I do genealogy and pay for that ancestry, which I can't afford it. The only time that I do it is in the winter. You know, you can imagine being from the Midwest. You know, when it's nice out, I'm out living my life. When, you know, unless it's raining or stormy or whatever. So really, I pay for this for a year, and I really only do it in the winter. And
okay.
I hadn't done it for a really long time. I had a lot of, last year was filled with health issues and grief, and it was one of the worst years that I've had in my life, frankly. But about 2 weeks ago, I started doing ancestry again and found some really amazing facts out, and enjoyed that. I'm a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution, and I found a couple more. They call them patriots. If you have someone in a direct line of your genealogy who fought in the American Revolution, and I found a couple more of those, but some fun facts that were even different, but exciting and entertaining, and it was light work. And I had started writing a book that a year ago, October, 7 chapters that had been edited, I had to leave it, because my dad passed away, and then last year was this hellacious year. And unlike my first two books, which were just about my experience, so there was no studying involved, it was telling two different stories. And this book took a lot of research. It's when you hear it wasn't the
I remember you telling me about this book a while ago, like a year or two ago. been a long time.
Well, yeah. It was a year ago, October, that I stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I had one health problem after another last year. And the point about that is I haven't gotten back to it yet. The genealogy is a great way to grease the skids to get back to it, because that is a project that's going to take much more intense focus that I can't just come and go, come and go, come and go. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's something I really need to have the time investment and the focus to get back to that. And I will, you know, when I'm ready sometime. But in the meantime, doing the genealogy has been fun, and the discovery in that. So it is good to tear yourself away from the reality of reality. It's kind of, I mean, it's kind of depressing. There's so much of it going on. There's so much unrest going on.
Yeah.
That I find that can make me tired watching that. And that's not anything I can do a thing about. You know, nothing
it's
I can
exactly
do anything about.
I can't do anything about it. Exactly. And I was like, I could spend my time, you know, being upset and you know, or I could spend my time trying to do something that, you know, that's purposeful, okay? And I've started to listen to music again. Okay, that was another thing I hadn't done, is to, you know, to take time just simply to sit, look out the window, and listen to some music, you know? And that's incredibly, you know, making space in my day, or at least in the week, maybe not every day, but, you know, making space to just think. Okay. Anyway, well, I probably better think about getting off, because here it's almost midnight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep,
I need to go to work
time.
In the morning. But I
Well, thank
I
you so
that,
much.
And I don't know that it was the absolute best. Like I said, I did that other presentation this weekend. And so I didn't really have the time to prepare as I normally would have wanted to for this one. So I kind of made the mistake of planning them both the same week.
Actually, I think it's good, because we all have challenges. We all have relationships. We all have challenges in relationships. We all need conflict resolution in relationships, better communication skills, and back to exactly where we started, ways of building trust in relationships for them to be able to weather the storm. At the end of the day, I think you can get through a lot of the conflicts if the trust is there. Trust building is a great thing to talk about, and I think there is a couple of great stories. But you're right, we are 5 minutes off the air. And Dr. Maria Romanos, I want to thank you for being here tonight and taking your time, even when you did the other big presentation. And I will fire you off a few dates tomorrow, and just let me know when you know.
Okay.
And I appreciate you being here with me tonight. Good to have you.
Thank you, Kim. It's always good to be with you. And good night, everybody. Thanks. Bye.
Good night. And good luck with your surgery. Okay, that was Dr. Maria Romanos, and we're 5 minutes down to the show, so I think what I'm going to play on my way out tonight is a song called Savior. And this song was actually by, this song was actually by the founder of our network. Leave you with something positive going out, and thank you all for being here. I'll be back next Wednesday with my second Wednesday of each month co-host, Karen, and this is a song called Savior. And good night, and God bless everyone. I appreciate you. Thanks for being here. Good night.
things I do. Well, I can't seem to recognize. Why can't I see beyond these eyes? And I think I need